Welcome to Wednesdays in the Word. This is a recording of our Wednesday morning Bible study held weekly at Chapel Hill and led by our Minister of Education, Casey Spigner. We walk each week verse by verse through the Scriptures, one book at a time. If you wish to join us in person, we meet each week at 10 a.m. in our sanctuary. We'd love for you to join us. Now let's open up God's Word together and see what God says to us today.
All right, Daniel chapter 6. This is lesson 9. We are not going to finish all of Daniel chapter 6 today. The last couple of chapters kind of, to me, have been easier to get all the way through. But today we're going to slow down, and there's a lot going on here. We want to save the mystery part that you are not aware is coming at the end of Daniel chapter 6 just yet. You don't know that Daniel's going to be thrown into a lion's den just yet. So let's hold off on that. That'll be next Wednesday morning. All right, but let's talk about the events that get us to that place. What happens here? So Daniel chapter 6, we're doing good. We're moving along. We've covered a lot of ground. We've covered nearly 80 years of Babylonian history here through the first five chapters. And we are at a moment. Last week we had profound disregard for God, I guess would be a good way to say it. So in chapter 5, we had Belshazzar the king, and he just completely thumbed his nose at God. He laughed in the face of God, and what happened? God took care of him, didn't he? There was no repenting. There was no opportunity for anything. He did not do what he was supposed to do and did not read the writing on the wall, literally. And so God took Belshazzar on out. And we pick up here today in chapter 6. Now, we have a bit of an issue today. So last week, we discussed the fact that history backs this up. You can go through the history books and see all of this until you get to chapter 6. Today we have a character named Darius the Mede. Darius the Mede, okay? And he is, according to Daniel chapter 6, the new king of this area, this nation, Babylon. History does not record a king named Darius the Mede. It did Belshazzar, it did Nebuchadnezzar. We can look in history and see all the kings between Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar. But there is no king, according to the history books, named Darius the Mede. You can understand what that leads to, right? That leads to biblical scholars trying to figure out who Darius the Mede is and make sense of it. But more importantly, it leads to worldly people trying to tell you that this is just a bunch of hogwash. Right, I knew we couldn't trust that Bible because there's people in there that don't even exist. All right, and look, I'll give you a list of names of who it could be, and I'll give you even the one that I think it is. But at the end of the day, I can't tell you for sure what's going on with this story. All right, I don't know who Darius the Mede is. I don't know why he's not a historical figure. What I do know is this. All right, we cannot allow this to be something that becomes a blip on the radar where we look back and we go, well, maybe it's not true, because it is true. I fully believe this story is actually true, and it is something that is put in this book for our benefit, okay? It doesn't matter to me who Darius the Mede is. Guess what, y'all? Darius the Mede is not the main character of this story, right? God, first and foremost, is the main character, and then Daniel is 1A, all right, so to speak, is the main character here. So that's where we're going to look through today. We're going to look through this and follow the life of Daniel and see how this all plays out. All right, so we're going to study through verse 15 today. So let's read it all from the very beginning, verse 1 of chapter 6, and let's see what it says to us, and then we'll come back and talk about it, all right? Verse 1, Daniel chapter 6 says, "It seemed good to Darius to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom, that they would be in charge of the whole kingdom, and over them three commissioners, of whom Daniel was one, that these satraps might be accountable to them, and that the king might not suffer loss. Then this Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners and the satraps, because he possessed an extraordinary spirit. and the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. Then the commissioners and the satraps began trying to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to government affairs, but they could find no ground of accusation or evidence of corruption, inasmuch as he was faithful, and no negligence or corruption was to be found in him. These men said, "We will not find any ground of accusation against Daniel unless we find it against him with regard to the law of his God." Then these commissioners and satraps came by agreement to the king and spoke to him as follows: "King Darius, live forever." You know, you can almost bet they're up to no good when they come into the king like that. All right, we've seen that now several times, all right? Verse 7, "All the commissioners of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps, the high officials and the governors have consulted together that the king should establish a statute and enforce an injunction that anyone who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days shall be cast into the lion's den. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it may not be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which may be revoked." Therefore, King Darius signed the document. That is the injunction. All right, so that's one little section right there. We'll walk through that. Now, verse 10 is a standalone verse, maybe one of the most profound verses in all of the book of Daniel. All right. This is very important. It helps us completely. If we didn't already know who Daniel was, it gives us some great insight into Daniel. Now, when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered the house. Now in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem, and he continued kneeling on his knees 3 times a day, praying and giving thanks to God, before his God, as he had been doing previously. What a testimony. What a powerful statement that is about Daniel. It tells us so much about who he is and his belief system and how he's lived his life that he continues to carry that out step by step. Verse 11, we keep going. "Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God. And then they approached and spoke before the king about the king's injunction. Did you not sign an injunction that any man who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days is to be cast into the lion's den?" And the king replied, "The statement is true according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which may not be revoked." That seems like a pretty big deal right there, all right? Verse 13, "Then they answered and spoke before the king, 'Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the injunction which you signed, but keeps making his petition 3 times a day. The nerve of this guy. Then as soon as the king heard this statement, he was deeply distressed and set his mind on delivering Daniel. And even until sunset, he kept exerting himself to rescue him. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, 'Recognize, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or statute which the king establishes may be changed.'" Sounds like a good old episode of Days of Our Lives or something going on in here, doesn't it? Everybody loves a good workplace drama. Everybody loves something that's going on that shouldn't be going. We watched a show last night, and one of the things I hate the most are sneaky people. And I'm not talking about like fun sneaky or like they'll sneak around trying to have a good time. I'm talking connivers, people who will just stab you in the back without giving any thought to anything that's going on. They are looking at nothing other than their very best interest. And this dude in the show last night, such a smarmy, that's a good word to describe him. That's when you can't think of any other word to describe somebody that's just, that's a good word, all right? But he went so far as he was trying to convince this guy to do something to make that so they could prove that he was, you know, crazy or off his rocker or unstable or something. So he just kept talking about him, talked about his mama, talked about his baby, talked about his dead wife, talked about all these other things. And finally, the dude just punched him. Can you imagine? And they did that. The whole thing was a trap. It was a setup so that they could prove that he was unstable. Well, listen, we got unstable craziness going on here in Daniel chapter 6 today. All right? We got connivers. We got schemers. We got people that can't stand for anybody else to have prosperity. They want it for themselves. All right, so Darius the Mede takes over in verse 1. And as is wont to do, we see this all the time. He sets up the government the way he wants it. He has, according to verse 2, there's government waste going on. I know that would surprise you. No government has ever done that before or since. Right, government waste. So he puts all these people, these three administrators, of which Daniel is one of them, and they're over all of these satraps and people. And it, look, in verse 2, it really does say that. The king planned to appoint him. Nope, that's not it. And that the king might not suffer loss. He was trying to keep his people accountable. Well, hey, if you've never been held accountable before and all of a sudden somebody wants to hold you accountable, you generally don't like that very much. We see that all the time. Somebody who's never been held accountable and all of a sudden somebody comes along and wants to hold them to a standard, they don't respond very well to it. All right? So that's what's going on here. As a matter of fact, Daniel, we're not surprised by this because this is who we've seen Daniel to be ever since the beginning of the book in Daniel chapter 1. But we see that in verse 3, Daniel was doing such a good job of distinguishing himself among the commissioners and the satraps that the king planned to appoint him over everybody over the entire kingdom. He was getting another promotion. We've seen that. It's now three promotions in six chapters of Daniel. Now, it's 80 years, and there probably was more. But Daniel, we should not be surprised. There's something about him. He stands out. He's different. Matter of fact, it tells us here in verse 3, because he possessed an extraordinary spirit, there was something different about Daniel. Now, here's something you need to know. If there's something different about you, that can go one of two ways. One, people will really notice and brag on you and commend you. We see that here with Daniel. Daniel is recognized as having a good spirit. There's something different about him. We've seen kings before that have talked about how great his God is and how he's got these spirits of the gods, capital G, living in him. They recognize, they uplift him, they keep moving him forward in a position of power and prominence. And so that good things can happen when people notice something different about you. But y'all, there's the other end of that spectrum too. When you live different, when you live set apart, when you live like Daniel, and look, Daniel, based on what I can read, is one of the most faithful and one of the most righteous people we see in all of Scripture. We see Job, and we know God allowed Job to go through things because God said to Satan, hey man, I don't think you can get him. He's so good and so faithful and so loyal and so righteous. I don't think you have at him. And Daniel seems to be living that same kind of lifestyle. But listen, when you live that kind of lifestyle, when you live right, when you do the right thing, not everybody finds that, just super attractive and awesome. Sometimes people will hold it against you because they think you're fake, they think you're doing it for the wrong reasons, they think you're just trying to get ahead by living this way. And so there will, at some time in your life, possibly, if there hasn't been already, well, maybe if y'all have made it to this point, maybe that won't happen, but somebody is going to be out to get you because you're a great person. And that couldn't be more backwards. Right? That makes absolutely no sense whatsoever in our mind. But now Scripture tells you that you will face persecution for the life that you live. When you take a stand for Christ, Scripture is perfectly clear. We've studied it in Sunday school in the last few weeks. We've talked about it in here. Sometimes life is going to get hard because God is going to allow you, maybe even the same way He allowed Job, He's going to allow you to go through things. And just because you try hard to live for Him doesn't make you exempt from those things. Now, the good news, when you go through those things, what have we learned? We've learned that no matter what you're going through, God is always with you. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, they've all been through tough things so far in this book. And not once has God failed them. Not once has God let them down. Not once has God abandoned them in their hour of need. All right? So now, let's get back to this Darius guy for just a minute. All right? So, again, scholars disagree. Biblical scholars will tell you one thing. Worldly scholars will tell you, hey, that it's just proof that the Bible is hocus pocus or whatever you want it to be. And look, I could sit here and give you the names. And like, there was a king named Gubaru, which is like Subaru, but with a G, like the car, right? There was Cyrus the Great. There was a king named, I'm not even going to come close to getting this right. It's spelled A-S-T-Y-A-G-E-S. I would call that Astyages. That probably ain't right, but hey, one of y'all want to try it? Anybody? All right, and then there are biblical scholars that will even agree with this, that maybe Daniel, when he was writing, lumped a bunch of kings together and just sort of came up with some ideas that different ones had done during the years, and he sort of created this Darius the Mede. All right, the closest of all of these that we see based on history and based on the things is this Cyrus the Great. But even some of the things about Cyrus the Great don't exactly line up with Darius the Mede, all right? Now, again, let's say this. It doesn't matter who it is, all right? Daniel wrote this. God inspired Daniel. The Holy Spirit worked through Daniel to give us this passage for a purpose, for a reason, all right? So it's there for us to learn from and understand. And look, this is faith, right? And we talk about growing our faith and strengthening our faith. It's one of those things that I can't explain. I can stand up here and talk for another 45 minutes, and I'm not going to get you any closer to understanding who Darius the Mede is than I am right now. It matters who God is. It matters who God is to Daniel. It matters who Daniel is in this story, all right? So, from this first few verses, a couple of things that we see here, and these are just overarching themes. I wrote down five things from this first five verses. God is faithful to Daniel in his work, all right? God is promoting, God is blessing, God is doing great things in the life of Daniel. He's always moving Daniel forward. And it's always based on how he works and how he obeys the Lord. So number one, God is faithful in his work. Number two, God is always moving Daniel forward. Number three, they found no wrong in Daniel. And trust me, they looked. They wanted to find something that they could go to the king and disqualify Daniel completely. They found nothing that they could find based on the way he carried out his life, based on the way that he operated in his work, based on all of those things, they found nothing that they could convict Daniel of. There was no wrongdoing in his life, except one area, which is not even really wrongdoing, right? In the manner and the way that he carried out his relationship with his God. And they didn't agree with it. Matter of fact, they didn't like it. They didn't want anything to do with it. So what did they do? They wanted to get, he was different. He was faithful. He believed something they didn't believe. So their whole response was just make this guy disappear. Make him go away. Right? So they found no wrong in him. And look, y'all, is that possible? How do we live our lives in such a way that when other people view us, that they find no fault in us? They truly won't. There's always going to be fault in us. But y'all, we're supposed to live our lives like this. As Christ followers, as believers in Jesus Christ, it is our responsibility to live, and I've used this word with my kids a lot, above reproach. Erase all doubt. Don't ever let anybody, don't even give them a foothold into thinking, that person may be a little off their rocker. That person may be not always doing the right thing. Try to live your life in such a way so that when people talk about you to other people, and look, I don't know if you know this or not, everybody gets talked about by somebody else at some point. It's the world we live in. But live your life in such a way. Look, if the best thing, Shannon talks about this all the time. He says one of the biggest things people talk about his preaching is he talks too much about the Bible. Kudos, brother. If that's the best they got, y'all, this is the example for how we are supposed to live. The fifth thing here is just, hey, I said it already, but not everybody's a fan of his faithfulness. Not everybody's a fan of when you live right and when you do the right thing. All right, so that's the first section. You know, this faithfulness can lead to good things and it can lead to bad things in your life, all right? The second thing, conflict is going to come in the midst of our faith. So in verses 6 through 9, we continue on. So look, this whole thing is a trap. It's a trick. And Darius the Mede falls for it, hook, line, and sinker, just like Nebuchadnezzar did. Oh, great king, gold statue, blah, 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 blah. Nebuchadnezzar's going to go out and build him a gold statue. Why? They played to his ego. They played to his pride. And look, that's all this group of people is about to do with Darius the Mede. So look at verse 6. They say, these commissioners and satraps came by agreement to the king and spoke to him as follows, and they buttered him up real nice. King Darius, live forever. Verse 7, and note this, the first sentence in verse 7 is a lie. All right? All the commissioners of the kingdom and the prefects and the satraps, the high officials, the governors have consulted together that the king should establish a statute and enforce an injunction that anyone who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days shall be cast into the lion's den. Why is that a lie? I guarantee you Daniel didn't sign off on it. I guarantee you Daniel didn't sign off on it. So first, they come before the king, and they're going to play with his emotion. They're going to build him up. They're going to play to his pride. They're going to stroke his ego. They're going to do all the things that you can imagine. Look, you want me to do something for you, you come tell me how great I am, and the more you talk, the more likely I am to do it. And that's the emotion they played on here with Darius. Oh, great king, live forever. We think that you should, we all agree, everybody got together and we came up with this great idea, king, that you should make a law that for the next 30 days, nobody should worship anybody, nobody should pray to anybody other than you. Oh, great king. Now let's be honest. We have the benefit, right? We know that's hogwash. We know this is malarkey. Whatever word you want to put on it, this couldn't be worse if we tried. You shouldn't pray to anybody else. You shouldn't worship anybody else. Exodus tells us that we have one God. We worship one God. Nothing else. But you know, if you don't believe in that God and you're pretty excited about who you are and you got to be the king, and somebody comes and says, "We think we should worship you." If you're not grounded in who you are, man, that sounds really nice. That sounds really good. So, guess what? Darius the Mede, whoever he is, falls into this trap. And what does he do? He goes out and he signs this thing. Therefore, verse 9, therefore, King Darius signed the document, that is, the injunction. Now, you ever heard the expression, you should always read the fine print? Darius didn't read the fine print. There was fine print in this document. We had Jennifer at the end of school, that they always love on teachers the last week of school, not the first, 175 days, but the last week. Anyway, she got a gift card to a restaurant in town, said free entree, free adult entree with purchase of another entree. Now, I don't know where you come from, but, I mean, that means the meal that she orders is going to be free. Anybody disagree with that statement? Well, there was fine print, y'all. There's a limit on that free entree. It really means it was a $10 coupon. They did not have one single entree on that item, on that menu, that was $10. It's fine. It was not, I mean, it was four more dollars. Not a really big deal, other than they didn't do what they said. Because there was other stuff down at the bottom that even my little fancy reading glasses with these things down here in the bottom wouldn't see. And she said, yeah, it's written down here at the bottom. I was like, I didn't read that. All right, so in this injunction, in this law, in this contract that Darius the Mede signs that makes it for the next 30 days everybody's going to worship him, they went down at the bottom in some really fine print. And they got the guy on the radio to read it really fast at the end so you didn't kind of hear, you heard it. They could say they did it, but not, you didn't really understand it, right? And so it said at the bottom, by the way, King, you can't undo this, and even you have to follow this law. I mean, that's the message version. That's my interpretation, but that's what happened. So go back to verse 8. Now, O King, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it may not be changed according to the law. Now, it's not really in fine print. They really told him that, but y'all, he ain't listening to that part. What's he listening to? Oh, they're going to worship me and pray to me and bow to me and love me and honor me. Me for the next 30 days. And they may have even whispered. I don't know, but whatever it was, he didn't catch, I don't think, this doesn't apply to everybody. You know, this applies and we can't undo it. Because later on, you're going to see, we already read it out loud, so it's not really a spoiler. Later on, he wishes he could undo it. He wants to undo it. He's trying to figure out a way to undo it, and he can't. All right? So, some people will do anything they can to get power and to see the person that's in power over them not be there anymore. So, this is what they do. They go out of their way to do this. Always pay attention. Always read the fine print, y'all. That's just for extra there. All right. So now let's look at verse 10 because y'all, this is the pivoting point of the whole story right here to me. Verse 10, we see the example of a man that is living out his faith, that is demonstrating his faith, and we've already said that this is the goal. This is how we should live our lives. But we see it even more on display here as we get to verse 10. All right. So, when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered his house. Now look, I don't know if these guys thought they were pulling a fast one on Daniel. I don't know if they just completely thought that he would be, you know, he's 80. He'll never know. I don't know. I don't know what's going on in their mind. Either they were trying to trick him, and they did this thing behind his back, and they didn't know what he would do, or they thought he would just fall prey to it. Or they just knew he was going to do it. It didn't matter. It didn't matter what the law said. They knew. Maybe there's a reason it was only for 30 days. They knew it wouldn't take long. They knew how this guy lived his life so well. They probably could have made it for 5 days. They probably could have made it for a long weekend. They probably could have called him the same day. But look, I don't know if they're trying to pull a fast one on him or if they just, I don't know. But y'all, there are not many testimonies in Scripture. That's a pretty big statement. I understand what I just said. There are not many testimonies in Scripture greater than that one verse about one human being. When Daniel knew that the document was signed, he ain't sneaking around, y'all. He knows what's happened. He knows what it says. He knows what's going to happen. He knows the outcome. He knows every detail about it. He's not worshiping his God blindly in this moment. He went up to the roof chamber, and what do you notice next? He left his windows open. Why? Are we permitted to bow and face a certain direction with our windows open when we worship our God? That's somebody else, y'all. That's not us. All right? Why were his windows open? Because he had absolutely nothing to hide. He was so bold in his faith. He was so bold in taking a stand for his God. He knew that for 80 years plus of his life that his God had been there for him. His God had carried him through. His God had already protected him. His God had already... Think of the things he's seen in 80 years. 65 years in captivity in Babylon. He has no doubt about who his God is. So there's no reason to waver. There's no reason to wonder. He continued kneeling on his knees three times a day. Now, there's an interesting concept here at the end of this verse. Praying and giving thanks before his God, as he had been doing previously. Now, that sentence, that last part of that sentence, that last phrase right there, as he had been doing previously, can slip by. That can almost seem to be an insignificant statement, right? But let me tell you, your faith does not begin in a crisis.
My version says, as was his custom since early days.
As was his custom since early days. Right? He didn't start when times got hard. And look, here's the truth. We've talked about this before, but here's the truth. The biggest thing that we miss out on as believers is the access that we have directly to God through prayer. It is the biggest shortcoming of us as believers. And I pray your prayer life, mine is so inadequate. And look, there's no matter how adequate it is, it could always be more adequate. But y'all mind, I just fall so short in this. But listen, here's just a few things that I wrote down and typed. This kind of discipline in your faith leads to peace in difficult times. But this kind of discipline is not created in difficult times. It's created in the regular activity in those moments, as he was in the habit of doing, as he had been doing previously, as he'd been doing for a long time. You see, when hard times hit, when persecution came, when difficult opportunities arose for Daniel, he didn't struggle with, oh no, what do I do? You know what he did? He just kept doing what he'd been doing. He didn't change a thing. He didn't panic. He didn't worry. He didn't fret. He didn't lose sleep. Because he had already established a pattern in his life of spending time with his God, clearly of being obedient and doing the right thing. And then the third thing I wrote down, this kind of discipline is not threatened by tough times, it's only strengthened by tough times. His prayer life got better through difficult times. Look, that's one thing we probably can all agree on. Most of our prayer lives get better during more difficult times. Right? You would probably agree with that statement for the most part. I've prayed more in the last 3 weeks with Troy gone than I have probably for him in a long time. And that's an indicting statement on me. I understand that. But it's the truth, because right now, this feels like a moment of testing. It feels like a moment of whatever word you want to describe on it in our lives. So I have gone to the Lord more in prayer through this time. But that ain't right. That's not how it's supposed to be. I'm supposed to be spending time in prayer every day, just like Daniel was doing. You're supposed to be spending time in prayer every day, just like Daniel was doing. Daniel Aiken, who is the author, he's a seminary president, was the writer of the commentary. He defined this whole thing this way. All of those three statements I just put, he made it much simpler. Christian character is not forged in the moment of adversity. Christian character is revealed in the moment of adversity. Who Daniel was didn't begin when times got hard. Hard times revealed who Daniel was. You don't become who you are as a believer in difficult times. Hard times reveal where you are in your walk with Christ. And y'all, again, we see this ultimate example of Daniel, who just kept doing what he'd always done. He didn't have to worry. He didn't have to fear. He wasn't upset. We don't see any sign anywhere throughout the entire book, not just in this chapter, but have you seen a sign yet where Daniel went, oh no, what do I do now? Nope. We just see Daniel keep on keeping on, man. We just see him keep on keeping on. Now look, if you want an example, if you don't pick up anything else out of this 50-minute, 45-minute talk today, hear this, y'all. Start now. If you're not doing it, start now. Start today. Go home, start today. Find some way to get in the Word. Find some way to get in prayer. Find some way to do these things. Because look, I pray today you're not in a test. I pray today you're not in a trial. I pray today you're not in a tough season of life. Don't wait till you are to start doing these things. Start now. So that when you get to those difficult seasons, they don't catch you off guard, they don't surprise you, they don't upset you, they don't alarm you. You just keep doing what you've been doing. You just keep depending on the Lord. You keep trusting in God for who He is, because He is all going to do this. Y'all, this was a pretty cool analogy that God gave me this morning. I didn't read this anywhere. If you like it, God gave it to me. If you don't like it, God gave it to me. So y'all, that's for that, all right? Again, this idea that we mess up, one of the things that we mess up the most is our prayer life. We have direct access to God, and most of us use it only as a life preserver in case of an emergency. And this is where this was good to me. Instead of, all right, when I say floaties, you know what I'm talking about? When little kids go to the pool, they put these things on their arms, right? And they can't go under. If nothing else, their arms are going to be kept up here because they won't go under. And look, we mostly put those on kids. I understand that that's really a childish kind of thing. But when we're in the deep end, most of us have to reach for the life preserver because we didn't put on our floaties. Somebody who puts on floaties knows they're going into the deep end. Somebody who puts on floaties knows they're going to where it may be dangerous. Somebody who puts on floaties knows that they need help all the time. Instead of waiting till you get in the middle of it and hoping somebody will throw you a life preserver. Prayer is going into it knowing that I need it. I need help. God, today I need help. It's a beautiful day. It's a sunshiny day. Everything is right in the world. Today I need your help, God. So I put on the floaties. I put on that prayer. I put on that part of the, it's hard to describe floaties as part of the spiritual armor, right? That's not scriptural. But that thing that I know I need to put on every day, because I know that there's possible potential that I may run into something out there that drags me down. Kids put on floaties because they know they're going to the pool. You don't wear floaties to Walmart, right? You wear them because you know you're going somewhere where it may be dangerous. Guess what, guys? You don't know where you're going. You don't know what God's got for you today. Could be Walmart. That's right. You may need them floaties after all at Walmart. Oh, we need to be like Daniel. This is the example. This is the goal. This is what our relationship with Christ should look like. We just keep doing what we've always done because we've always been doing the right thing. And we're so good at doing that right thing, and not in a bragging way, not in a prideful way, but we're so good at doing that right thing all the time that whenever somebody tries to find something bad to say about us, the best thing they can do is, well, he wears floaties. He's always spending time in prayer. He's always serving his God. All he does is preach the Bible. Right? That's the example of what our life is supposed to look like. Now, let's get in. I'm going to read verses 11 through 15. Let's finish up this little section right here, and then we'll come back next week, and we'll Paul Harvey this thing up. We'll tell you the rest of the story, all right? Verses 11 through 15, we see Darius, and you're going to be shocked by this, has been tricked. He's been duped. It says in verse 11, then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God. That's not a shock. Verse 12, then they approached and spoke before the king about the king's injunction. Now look, they know an answer to this. They know the answer to the question they're about to ask, but they can't wait to ask it. They are going to gloat in the king's face, and they're going to gloat in Daniel's face. They know the answer to the question, but y'all, it doesn't stop them from asking it. Did you Not, now look, notice they didn't really kind of come in with, okay, King, live forever, you're the best, woohoo. They didn't start with that this time, right? So, did you not sign an injunction that any man who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O King, for 30 days is to be cast into the lion's den? Now, what I don't know, because the written word doesn't help with this sometimes. I know the king's words. I don't know the king's thought process. So the king replied, if you just want simple English, the statement is true according to the law of the Medes and Persians. And notice, he was listening more than what I gave him credit for a while ago, which may not be revoked. So now what I don't know is he just, is that just a statement of fact? Is that just words that come out of his mouth? Or does halfway through the statement he go, which may not be revoked? It kind of hits him as these words are coming out of his face. And he realizes just exactly what's happened. And so verse 13, then they answered and spoke before the king, Daniel. And I guarantee you the king went, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah. Look, 65 years later, that's how they still refer to him. They don't like this cat. They don't like this guy at all. It doesn't matter who he is. He's still 65 years later, well, you know, one of those exiles, one of those slaves, one of those captives. Pays no attention to you, O king, or to the injunction which you signed, but keeps making his petition three times a day. The horror. Look at verse 14. I don't know at what point Darius figured it out, but he's figured it out now. Then, as soon as the king heard this statement, he was deeply distressed. And he set his mind on delivering Daniel. Look, Darius wants to do the right thing. He understands Daniel's not a bad dude. He understands Daniel hadn't done anything wrong. He understands the worst thing that Daniel's done is pray to this God that he's believed in for all of his life, and he ain't even mad about it. He's not upset. He doesn't. Matter of fact, it tells us that he even works until sunset, which I guess for the king is a really long day. Even until sunset, he kept exerting himself to rescue him. Darius is torn up about this. He trusted Daniel. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if kings had friends or how that worked, but he had grown to be friends with Daniel. He thought enough of him that he was fixing to make him in charge of everybody else other than the king. He was fixing to be given a great task and a great responsibility, and he wasn't just gonna give it to him, he'd earned it. Darius knows who Daniel is. Verse 15, then these men came by agreement to the king and said, don't forget, dude, you signed it. You can't undo it. Doesn't matter how much you want to, we got you. We tricked you. We trapped you. You can't, nothing you knew about it. To the lion's den he must go. Now look, to me this kind of is a foreshadowing of who Satan is, right? This is Satan. We've used the word scheme, we've used the word connive, we've used all of these words to describe just exactly what's going on here. And this is nothing more than the playbook of Satan. This is the playbook of the devil. He tricks, he lies, he steals, because that's who he is. The Bible says he came to steal, kill, and destroy. That he is nothing more than that. That's the only playbook he has. And he will lie, he will manipulate, he will do everything he can in his power to gain power. But the old devil, here's something about the devil that you ever watch the Coyote and the Roadrunner? One of my favorite cartoons as a kid. That poor Coyote. Man, did he go through it or what? And that Roadrunner would get him every time. He'd draw caves on the tunnels on the brick, and he'd just go through it, and then the Coyote would run right up and just. But you know what I give the Coyote credit for? He had perseverance, didn't he? He was either too dumb, which is really probably the answer, or he was just so bound and determined, and it didn't matter how many times he failed, he was just going to keep on. And look, that's how I view Satan in this story. That's all. He's too dumb. He's smart enough to trick most of us, or trick all of us. Matter of fact, I read something the other day that said he convinced a third of the angels to leave heaven. He's powerful. But you know what? He's not victorious. You know what he's not? He can be powerful. He can be cunning. He can be scheming. He can be all this stuff. But every time you see him play this out in this book, what happens to him? He loses. He thought he had it figured out. Satan is this group of guys standing before the king going, ha, 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 we got you, buddy. But God, right? And look, Satan's going to get you. Satan's going to trick you. Satan's going to trap you. Satan's going to convince you of things. He's done it to me. He's done it to you. He ain't done, all right? He's still working. Satan's powerful. But he's not victorious. He may win a few minor skirmishes along the way, but he is not victorious. He's not ever going to be victorious. Okay? But you know how you overcome those schemes? You know how you overcome those things? You live like Daniel. I'm not saying you won't ever fall into it, but it's a lot harder to fall into it. You see through it. Look, when I was reading what those guys told the king to start with, you could see through it. You could see it a mile away. Yeah. We should make a law for 30 days. Yeah, that sounds good. And nobody can pray to anybody but you. Well, that sounds even better. Yeah, I like that. I mean, they're just making this thing up on the spot, and it's so transparent. And the closer you are to God, the more transparent Satan's schemes are. Right? The closer you are to God, the more transparent Satan's schemes are, and the less likely you are to fall prey to them, to give in to them. But it requires a faith like Daniel. It requires living a life like Daniel. That's how it's done, y'all.
Thanks for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed listening to what God had to say to us. If you have any questions about today's Bible study, you can call our church office at 205-339-4071, and we will be glad to answer any questions you might have. God bless you, and we hope to see you again next week.